So welcome back to How to Be a Better DM. This is a show for Dungeon Masters who want to become the best Dungeon Master in the world, but frankly don't really have a roadmap or are just maybe a little overworked, tired, and confused.
Or you're just bad.
I didn't want to say it. We have an awesome show today for you. First of all, I'm Justin Lewis. I'm your host. I've been with you for the last 130 episodes or so. And behind the camera is my co-host, Cade Notley. And we actually have two awesome guests here with us today. We have Matt on the left and Stan on the right, both from Wasatch Forge here in, what city are we in?
Salt Lake City proper,
Utah. And if you, in case you didn't know, from the forge in Wasatch Forge, this is a blacksmith forge or shop? What would you
call it? Blacksmith shop. 100%.
Blacksmith shop. Awesome. And actually, fun fact, their main export is blacksmiths. They actually make blacksmiths. So if you want to just give like a quick intro of what Wasatch Forge is, and then we'll dig into everything else.
Yeah, so Wasatch Forge grew from a desire to make swords and knives when I was a young kid and get the capability to do that. And doing that in, oh man, I don't know, as a 14-year-old kid in my dad's shed on the side of the house, there wasn't any teachers, especially in Utah. There wasn't YouTube, there wasn't a whole lot of options to get that capability, so I just started working on my own and wanted to make product. Wow. Wanted to make things for me to have, wanted to eventually make things to sell. As that dumb 14-year-old kid didn't burn down his dad's shop.
Wow. In the house. Miracle, right?
That's right. And then I apprenticed up at This Is The Place Monument. It's a little LDS historic recreation village. Yeah. When I was 17 and 18 for a couple of seasons there. And then I started my own business, started making things for garden centers and things like that. Failed absolutely miserably. Hmm. Then I was still a blacksmith, but very, very hobby level. I met, kind of got into the community of blacksmiths in Utah. A whole bunch of old-timers who were passionate about it. They kind of left me alone. They would occasionally do, like once a quarter, they would have a meeting. Hmm. At one of the shops, and it was definitely this good old boys club. Mm. So I kind of felt disheartened, and I stopped doing it. Started working at a steel warehouse, started meeting some people who were up-and-comers that were my peer group. Mm. Then we got together, rented out a little shop, and then they started dropping off one by one. Mm. And I just started keeping the shop going, and one of my apprentices said, Matt, I want to make you a web page. Cool, great. What do you need? Nothing, I'll take care of it. It's my day job. All right, neat. 2 months after that, the University of Utah Continuing Ed Program reached out to me, called me, said, hey, I saw your web page. I see that you teach classes. Do you want to contract with us and do ongoing blacksmithing classes for us?
Wow.
I still had one of my friends that was still slightly involved in that, but he had done a lot of extracurricular teaching, and he said, yeah, we can totally do that, no problem. And so we started teaching for the U of U, started teaching additional classes, and that started bringing money into Wasatch Forge. Mm. Being a such a time-honored craft that takes so much time, you can't compete with Walmart. You can't compete with Cold Steel. You can't compete with United, God forbid. to get these kind of things that we create. So there's just no market in that.
Yeah.
But as I've kind of learned over the years, our hands are built the way that they are to hold tools.
Yeah.
And the tools that everybody gets to hold nowadays are mouses and keyboards. And we're all white-collar workers. who don't get to make anything.
Yeah.
And so I've capitalized on that itch in the back of our heads that says, I need to make something. I need to have something that is mine and my design that I can either pass along or give away or sell. Mm-hmm. And there's this real passion there. And I said, cool, all right, so I'm going to make money off of this. And Wasatch Forge changed to a school. So we teach 6 days a week. We have Junior Smith programs. We have people that come in from out of state and take these large classes and learn to make knives, not unlike the one I carry on my hip. Of course, this is a little bit, 200-year-old wrought iron on the side, a Crew Forge V Edge, ironwood on the handle, because, you know, if you have a theme, you might as well stick with it.
Yeah.
That was actually made by one of the best smiths that has come out of Wasatch Forge, Stephen Moon. Now, one of the best smiths that came out of Wasatch Forge lends itself to a lie.
Hmm.
And I could stop right there and say, oh, well, that's because of Wasatch Forge.
Right.
That's not. It's because of the craftsman.
Yeah.
That you are inside and the time that you put in.
Yeah.
He's a medically retired vet, and his capability to find a process and refine it and make it excellent made him the smith he is
mm-hmm.
today.
Yeah. And probably to that note, there's the best forger, or not forger, the best smith to come out of Wasatch Forge probably hasn't come out of Wasatch Forge yet, and maybe listening or watching this right now, right?
100%. Start here.
Exactly. Exactly. Awesome. Well, we wanted to talk to them specifically about blacksmiths and talk to them in front of you and for you, the listener, because in D&D, the blacksmith is a very important character or idea, topic, which is kind of interesting because a lot of games don't really involve them.
Don't have it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You look at 5th Ed, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, I want to be a craftsman. I want to be a crafter. And it's like, where do I put that?
Yeah.
Where's that on my background?
What skill is that?
And they've completely omitted it. It's one of my hugest pet peeves about it, because it is such a core part of Matt Danielson,
mm-hmm.
is I am a craftsman. I make things. I solve problems through the stuff that I build, not just the things that I do.
Absolutely. So. And actually, I love that you brought that up, because that was honestly two of my questions that I wanted to ask. But also, we have Stan here. So, Stan, if you can give us a quick background of you and your smithing. And also, just so you know, listener, they are actually about to go play a D&D game later.
Of course.
So,
I mean, you don't run a professional blacksmith shop and not play D&D. It's
absolutely.
Not done.
Absolutely. So, after you give us a quick overview of yourself as well, if you guys could talk about the characters or DMing style that you're going to be employing tonight.
Ooh.
A lot of my
story on getting into blacksmithing and doing all that, very similar to Matt's. Very nerdy kid.
Yeah.
We'll start there. Really like the idea of armor and swords and all that. And I see in movies, I see in video games, played a lot of Skyrim at the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Was looking at smithing, and I'm like, okay, I want to start there. I want to get something hot. I want to hit it. We'll start there.
Yeah.
And literally started a hole in the ground in my backyard.
Wow.
Literally made a forge out of digging a hole and throwing wood into it and having a hairdryer blow air into it. It was awful.
But effective?
No. Not effective. Definitely left me wanting. But I ended up doing that for about a year. My parents were like, okay, this is kind of sucking. He's not losing interest.
It's not a phase.
He's sticking. It's not a phase. And then I ended up having a neighbor who did some historical recreation at a place called the Benson Gristmill in Utah, kind of in between a place called Tula and Grantsville.
Hmm.
And he saw me attempting metalwork in my backyard and went, oh, you know, there's a blacksmith shop there. We just need someone hitting hot steel, doing something there. There's already tools there.
Yeah.
You want to come on down, they're going to have field trips come through.
You just need to look the part, essentially?
I just needed to look the part, and it was a dirty blacksmith shop. They ran coal, they ran charcoal. It was very dusty.
And it's wild that both of us started in a historical recreation environment.
Yeah.
And this is a decade ago for you?
Yeah, about a decade ago.
And 2.5 decades ago for me.
Wow.
But still, that's where we started. There wasn't a school.
Yeah, there wasn't Forged in Fire back then, right?
Absolutely. I made a lot of money off of Forged in
Fire. Yeah, I bet you did. that looks easy.
made people go, wait a minute, that's a thing that people can do?
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, why don't you go to this webpage?
Yeah, I ended up moving towards, well, after doing that for another year and a half, ended up, looking on the internet, trying to find things. It's probably about the same time that you got a webpage going. Maybe just before, we ended up calling you quite a bit, and you said, No, I don't want to take a kid into my shop. I don't want to do that. No, you're like, what, 14?
14, 15-year-old kid.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was just, no, I don't want to take a kid into my shop. Please, he's been doing it for like two and a half years. Please, just see him.
Oh, shit, I've got to. he's going to hurt himself or yes. burn his house down. I remember that kid. It was me.
So, I came in, I started apprenticing, and so a lot of that story that Matt just told overlaps right with that.
Yeah.
I watched him do his University of Utah classes. When I was 16, I even was trying to help with some of them. So really, that story's been told.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Cool. So, just real quick, your D&D characters, or if one of you are the DM, what are your plans for the party tonight? In summation.
Okay, this game. Oh, that's a great question. We're...
Dump stat min-maxer.
Okay.
You gotta be stupid, man.
Well, I like building bricks. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
My character, I think where we left off, I was currently restraining a goblin to interrogate him.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah, actually.
Very classic.
Very.
We're doing... what world are we running right now?
So it's a Pathfinder first edition.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing Rise of the Rune Lords, and we're about 3 or 4 sessions in is all.
Awesome.
Fun.
Yeah, I'm playing with a bunch of old guys with, like, Pathfinder. First edition. So, 5th Ed is a little bit less their game.
Yeah.
But yeah, so playing a brick, currently restraining a goblin. They're running around this town that we're currently in. Indiscriminately murdering, I think, is probably what they're
absolutely
up to. Doing what goblins do.
Yeah, that's a goblin thing.
It's a very goblin thing. I don't know, what was your... You go ahead and tell them what your character was doing while we were doing that. That sounds like a good time.
Do we want to know?
So I don't know.
I have a really hard time not just playing Matt in a different hat.
Mm.
And for people listening on the podcast, I am 6'7", 300 pounds, and very muscular, still overweight, still have a whole bunch of extra, I've been married for 2 decades, so...
That'll do it.
But very much a blacksmith and built individual, and playing the fighters and playing the people that can do that is too close to home.
Mm.
And so in order to have the escapism that I'm aiming for, to have the joy that I'm trying to do, I want to have a different situation rather than stand up and yell at somebody and they do what they're told because,
That's work, right?
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm playing a Pathfinder gnome wolf rider.
Nice.
And he's a full-blown cavalier and very grumpy and attitude, and isn't the playful gnome at all. Mm. Is just a grumpy get shit done.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really fun because he can only do that for so long. Until, at least in my head, he's going to have to start changing things because he needs new experiences, because the Pathfinder gnomes are half fey and have to have experiences or start dying slowly.
Okay.
So it'll be fun to go, wait a minute, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Sorry. Who is this guy that just woke up and is now playing tricks instead of being the hard ass?
Right.
And so it'll be really fun for me to be able to continuously have...
Shift.
Yeah, shifts.
Yeah.
Mild schizophrenic shifts.
Yeah, I love that.
Because I got to stay alive.
No, that sounds super fun. I love that. Very, very classic D&D, or Pathfinder, I guess, in this case. So when I first called you on the phone to talk about this interview, you mentioned something fairly interesting to me. And I think this will be somewhat of a hot take for people who aren't blacksmiths.
Okay.
You mentioned a few qualms about blacksmiths in RPGs. Now, I know that we could probably go on this a long time. So real quick, give the listener basically just kind of a rundown of your biggest issues with blacksmiths in most TTRPG games.
Okay, so the biggest issue that you've got is blacksmiths are the civilization, they're the great civilizers.
Mm-hmm.
You have one, and this is a statistic that I can't back up, that I've heard that blacksmiths tell other blacksmiths, so take it with the biggest grain of salt. One in 20 people was a blacksmith in 15th century, 14th century,
really?
13th century. If you wanted to have metalwork done, you could not do it.
Mm.
You had to have a blacksmith do it.
But at least, like, one in 20 people, you probably knew a guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. In every village. If you didn't have a blacksmith, the
village
would not survive.
Mm.
Your pans would rust through, they'd get cracks, and all of a sudden you can't cook for your family.
Mm.
You can't plow your fields half as effectively if somebody is not able to re-weld your plow together.
Mm.
So you've got to have a blacksmith, or you have very, very low capability to farm appropriately.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at how many people farmed in medieval times, 90% of the population was tied up in farming, and that entire industry is drastically improved by having a blacksmith. So every village has a blacksmith, but every blacksmith is every blacksmith is for village services, not for war. Where are the blacksmiths that service war? At war or in the castle? That's it. There's no demand for somebody to go, oh, hey, can you make me a short sword? No, I've got to make a plowshare. What do you want me to do?
Mrs. Jenkins got to eat.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. This entire village is depending on me to do this work. You can't come in here and buy the short sword off of the rack because I don't have a rack. Much less, I don't have a short sword.
Do you have any magic weapons?
I mean, seriously. Can I buy a steel shield? No. No, you can't. You know why?
Huh.
Because I don't know how to make steel sheet.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't know how to make steel sheet? I can make a bloomery, I can recycle iron and steel from my scrap pile, but I don't have steel sheet. But wait, it's 16th century. Okay, cool, we got cannons and handguns and it's no longer D&D.
Yeah.
Okay, so you look at how long plate mail in particular, made out of steel sheet and raised out of bars of high quality blast furnace level iron that has been puddled multiple times in order to get the impurities out of it to get it to be able to turn into a breastplate, a pauldron, a cuisse. At that technology level, you are 40 years away from cannons. Because it goes hand in hand. You don't have plate mail without having cannons. You don't have that. It doesn't exist in your world. And who's making plate mail? What kind of an armorer has the capability to make a suit of plate mail? The king's armorer, who is only servicing his 30 to 40 knights. You will never get a suit of plate mail. You will never get a suit of breastplate. You'll never get a suit of chainmail. Now, chainmail gets a little bit more fun, because the only thing you have to do is you have to pull wire.
Mm.
And then you can rivet your chain links together. So the biggest problem that I have is that you have this idea of false 16th century level technology available in a world that is relying on 13th century attitudes and raiding and things of that nature. And it just doesn't exist. Of course, we're playing D&D. We are not...
It's fantasy for a reason, right?
...caring at
yeah,
all about
yeah.
that. That's right. So the biggest thing is that if you want to enhance your world, you have to make metal armor and things like that valuable and hard to get, at least in my world. And so you're asking what kind of a GM I am.
Yeah.
And I'm an ass.
I think that should be like a t-shirt, like GM type.
Ass.
Exactly.
So if you have magic, you all of a sudden have industry. Mm. If you have industry, you're no longer playing D&D.
Yeah, it's like steampunk or...
It's steampunk, 100%. Yeah. Within 40 years. As soon as somebody goes, wait a minute, decanter of endless water on a shelf?
Yeah, that's... that's a...
Water wheel.
Oh my gosh.
Decanter of endless water in the desert? Oasis.
Yeah.
With all the... with industry... off of one magical item.
Wow.
The ability to craft wondrous item, create a decanter of endless water at fifth level, all of a sudden you have drastically changed your entire world. Everyone has water wheel technology and capability. Don't get me started on fabricate spell.
Oh gosh. I freaking hate that spell so much.
It literally doesn't exist in my world.
Yeah.
Even when I go back and play... the earlier versions of games, it's like, this one is a no.
Yeah. Like, you get a block of gold that's, like, the size of a small person.
Well, the biggest issue is that in the spell description from 3.5, you can take a copse of trees and turn it into a bridge across a ravine.
Oh, wow.
That's literally one of the prescribed uses and says, this is what you can use it for. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Why aren't there bridges everywhere?
What about that pile of iron?
Yeah.
Greetings, fantasy fans and adventure aficionados. I'm your host, Kip Killigan, and to my left is the legendary Stormclad Thundertongue.
Who in the hell's put sleeves on my suit?
Join us every Monday to watch teams of heroes rise through the ranks of the League of Ultimate Questing.
We're serving up a double-decker high fantasy blood sport burger with all the comedy fixins and no napkins. Bring a bib, because things are gonna get messy.
Visit theluq.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are available. No dungeon too deep, no quest too questionable. This is the League of Ultimate Questing. And now a word from our sponsors.
1 out of 4 barbarians over 30 suffer from erectile dysfunction.
I can't keep it up like I used to.
That's why there's Viagra for rage enhancement. Ask your party cleric if Viagra is right for you. Contact an apothecary for any rages lasting more than 4 hours. Viagra. We keep you raging hard on the battlefield.
And those swords. Swords are too hard to make. I've actually got all the skill points in 3 different smithing crafts. Mm. 3 different smithing... You didn't... Yeah, no, I'm an ass, GM, I'm sorry, and now I'm going to ruin your entire economy. There was actually literally a TikTok that I was watching, and I'm like, yes, that's what I've been saying
for
10 years.
That's funny. I think what Matt is really talking about is kind of, this is the fuzzy line of the suspension of disbelief.
Absolutely.
Like, where the GM hopes no one's going to ask questions like this.
That's right.
But eventually someone does, like, for example, plant growth, another one of those spells.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can spend 8 hours and then everything within, like, a half mile radius doubles its production for the next year.
Yep. All of a sudden, that industry has changed.
Yeah, you could cast that 3 times in 24 hours. That's like a mile and a half of just never going to, like, no one's going to starve.
A mile and a half, so it's a half mile radius?
Yeah, so
How
I guess...
How many acres is that in a mile
radius? I don't even know.
Lots.
Like, that's crazy.
And you have that capability, and so in my world, you don't gain hit points past fifth level. You can't gain, you can't cast spells. The time to cast... is times by 100 or 1,000, depending on how hard it is, unless you're in your sanctum.
Okay.
You have to take an additional level of something else.
Yeah.
Every other level to be a wizard. And it really drops down the entire capability of magic in the world to do things. I play Lord of the Rings. I don't play...
Harry Potter. Yeah. Very big difference there.
Yeah.
Stan, did you want to say something?
I should note... in our group, we have selected someone else to be the GM. should point that out.
We just played Fantasy Vietnam, Matt. We're going to play Pathfinder first edition Rise of the Rune Lords because you're an ass, as aforementioned.
Yeah, that's kind of happened. One of our players, we, as we're getting into this Pathfinder world, you know, much more fantasy, much more magic, he's, you ruined him. He's broken.
Yeah.
He's broken.
Yeah, 100%. Brendan, one of my Smiths.
Oh, we just met him, yeah?
We just met, yeah, 100%. He's got this severe trauma.
Just on a regular day at work, I'm working with him, I'm talking to him, and he's like, oh yeah, you make your character yet? I'm like, yeah, I made my character, I got my armor, I got my weapons, and some rations, and, you know, just typical regular stuff. He's like, oh yeah, so I have my tent, and I have my mule, and I have my tables, and I have my candles, and I have my writing implements, I have X amount of papers in my writing implements. I also have to make sure
Do you keep track of arrows? Are you that?
I do.
Oh, goodness.
And if you fire an arrow, depending on what environment is in the background,
it's going to break.
Dictates the percent chance of it breaking.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest problem is that I know how arrows are made, and I know that they are 100% disposable.
Yeah.
They are not something that you go and you pick up and you use.
No.
Again, if you hit your target, your arrow is basically broken. If you miss your target, your arrow is basically broken. Unless it's in a field, then you have a 60-70% chance that it's not broken if you can find it.
Mm.
Yes, I'm absolutely that master GM.
So I went and double-checked with the current GM. Okay, so one of the players is scared, and we haven't started playing. He's only making a character, and I don't know if he's done yet. I mean, he's got a lot of gear on him. He's a character that...
You said he had a table?
He had a table. Oh, yeah.
For his tent.
It's a special table as well. It was even in the list of items, so you can turn it into something that can display items as well, just in case he needs to do that for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't know what that story is.
I don't know.
He's thinking all the angles.
Oh, he is very much so. He's a half-caster build is what he is. Mm. So I'm like, okay, cool. So you're running a scimitar. You're doing some half-casting. Cool. Why do you have the bow? He's like, oh, just in case I need to hunt so I don't die and starve. I'm like, oh, okay. So you have... He's like, yeah, just in case. I expect to be doing that frequently. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna talk to the game master real quick and kind of check what our setting is and kind of see what...
Yeah.
Run some scenarios by him. And I think we'll be fine. I think he will have the additional animal, and also he's tracking all the feed for it as well.
Mm.
So he's making sure that it's fed. And so I'm sure he will be playing a management game significantly more than everyone else, or we'll forget he has old stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
So depends on that.
And it sounds... I was going to say, it sounds worse than it is, but... The points that he's bringing up and that I'm bringing up are not completely invalid. We're playing them a little bit for the laughs, but I try to get my players to experience as much realism in their fantasy as possible. We have real conflict, and if you don't gain hit points past fifth level, you're always worried about the guy with the great axe with the times three crit.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that one can kill me in one swing. And so we want to play as realistic as we can while still having fun.
Yeah.
So there's still this suspension of disbelief. There's still this capability
of,
guys, you can buy your armor and whatever, and it's not going to be hard to get it repaired. You don't have to spend the points on profession armor smith because you want to be able to fix your armor. It's not that bad, but you know, if you decide to go down an underground river and have your entire party all chained together by a rope and failure,
someone's gonna drown.
Well, I was nice and
oh good.
nobody drowned, but they all wound up in the Underdark. So my entire campaign literally went from, here's my sandbox, here's my invading kingdom, here's the court, here's the hobgoblins, here's the yada, 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 and this is how it'll grow and progress. So if they don't pay attention to this, then this will become the next issue as the levels increase.
As it happens.
The environment gets more and more complicated. And then they go away, and I'm like, everything gets more complicated when you come back.
It's like the garden.
And then I'm going to do an entire new campaign for the Underdark, because it was either kill them all,
which you can't do and still have them like you.
That's right. But just so that it's on the record, I almost got voted to run the latest game. Mm. People were like, "Eh, well, we'll have another Matt game."
Yeah, so it's not that's awesome.
I was a little worried. I read the journal entries. There's a
We've got a writer in the group.
Oh, that's awesome.
Without going too far into that, we have a writer friend who, for his extra XP every session, he would
if you
write a whole log.
If you do a good journal entry, I give 10% extra XP bonus. And that makes sure that I have several people taking really good notes.
Yeah, that's smart.
Then this guy is a writer, and so he literally
it's like a
from
book.
His character's perspective. 100% beautiful, lots of
fun.
And it's written from his character's perspective and all of his character's prejudices, which is really exciting to
very interesting.
Reading it too. Yeah, I saw that.
Very interesting.
Oh, it's a really good time.
That's awesome. So, gosh, where did that question go? It was just on the tip of my tongue. No.
What were we doing tonight?
Yes. So, I wanted to sum a little bit of what we've been talking about because I think some really important points have been brought up. And interestingly enough, not exactly about blacksmithing, in my opinion, right? This is a little bit more about the game itself. So, first thing, session zero. It's very important you get an understanding of who the DM is.
Oh, yeah.
And the DM also explains the realism that they're going to expect, right?
Yeah, so the weirdest part for me is that I've been playing since I was 12. My first character I made with my sister as the GM when I was 6.
Wow.
I've been running games since I was 12, and the writer friend of mine and I have been playing D&D or other myriad systems forever, you know, 3 decades, 2 decades.
Yeah.
And we've never done a session zero.
Hmm.
And I like, okay, cool. I'm running a game for my kids.
Yeah.
And I want to do a session zero for my kids, and I want to make sure that everything is
copacetic.
Yeah, that everybody understands exactly what you're talking about. And I'm like, hang on, guys, we gotta stop this game right now. We gotta have a session zero, you know, 30 sessions into this campaign that we're currently in, and know what people are expecting, because this was really damn important, and we have never done this. What is your guys' rating? Are you guys okay with this? Where do you stand on this, and yada, yada, yada? And so now, our method is we do a session zero for each GM. So when the campaign ends, we have several GMs in our friend group, and we're like, okay, so I can run this, and I like this, and I like this Monster of the Week type game, and no, I like this horror survival game, which is what mine turns into, because consequences.
Yeah. It's not your fault, right?
It's not my fault. No, not at all. I don't know anything about these animals.
You broke Brendan. That was you.
I did. I did. I totally broke Brendan. 100%. But yeah, session zero is so incredibly important to know what you're getting involved in. So,
I love it. One last note on just based on what I've understood and maybe some world building tips, and then we'll move on to some of these other questions. So first, it's not a village unless there's a blacksmith.
Correct.
If there's no blacksmith, it's just like a grouping of houses that all
need. It's a small farm community.
It's like a settlement
that needs to travel to get things on a routine basis.
Exactly.
It's not, I have to go get medicine for my sick grandmother. It's, I have to go fix the plowshare. Otherwise, we're going to all starve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which could give you some really interesting plot hooks if you find some sort of settlement like that. And there's raiders, right? They can't.
And they killed the blacksmith and his apprentice.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, or, you know, they left or whatever, right? They're like towns. Based on what we're hearing, towns can literally just disappear if the blacksmith leaves to find other opportunities.
Yeah. Hence the term journeyman.
Because
you've got a master of a blacksmith shop. That means he owns and controls his blacksmith shop. Then you have an apprentice, and everybody knows master and apprentice. It's a, you know, every
it's the rule of two, right?
That's right. But then there's the journeyman, which is the blacksmith who is going out to look for these farm communities to set up a blacksmith shop, to become an important person, to become a foundation member of the farming community, and turn it into a village.
Wow.
So you've got, you know, apprentice, journeyman, and then master blacksmith.
That's interesting. So the journeyman is like...
is a blacksmith who's on a journey to find his shop.
Wow.
That's so cool.
I love that. Awesome. So, let's see. I think we covered that one. We'll get that one when we go out in the shop. So, kind of a two-part question. Have you seen blacksmiths being used in an interesting way in a game? And what are some missed opportunities that you think people don't take advantage of with blacksmiths in TTRPGs?
So this kind of gets into the whole weeds thing.
Okay.
So I try to avoid not necessarily boring situations.
Sure.
But very mundane situations. And the biggest problem with a blacksmith is it lends itself to those mundane situations.
Right.
It's great when, hey, we found this suit of armor. We have to go get it resized. And then you go and you have a conversation with a blacksmith about getting that suit of armor resized, because it's not magical. And that hobgoblin who is wearing that cobbled together suit of half plate, you don't fit in it.
Nope.
So that is, in my opinion, a fun quest. And it's a very minor quest.
Yeah.
You're literally going and making sure that you supply enough finances to the town to take the blacksmith away from his job, because he's always going to be busy. There's not a lot of downtime. And so it's not, you're not necessarily paying the blacksmith just money for him to go out and do things. It's literally taking away a resource.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
You may be asking yourself, how do I get more out of How to Be a Better DM? You probably want even more tips, more entertainment, or perhaps just exclusive access to a secret society of people bent on ruling the world. Well, we don't actually have desires to rule the world, but it does sound like what you want and what you need is to join our Patreon. You'll get access to our private Discord, which will give you direct access to all the hosts of this show, as well as our other Dungeon Masters who are just like you. You'll also be able to make fan requests for How to Be a Better DM. And lastly, you just help support the show so we can give you ever better content. If you want to join the Patreon, go to sessionzerostudios.com/startadventure and join our Patreon today.
I'm trying to think. I recently was doing a playthrough of Baldur's Gate. I kind of like, so they've got a blacksmith there as well. I believe his name is Damon. And nothing too interesting going on with as far as interesting mechanics with him, or sure, some of the blacksmithing things that he does. But it does show that he is kind of an integral part of the group that he's with. He has to kind of roll with them. He's very important that he's there. Sure, depending on what decisions you make, he may not be there. and they still move on relatively fine. But that kind of demonstration of him and his association with the materials that he works, because depending on certain paths you take in the game, he shows an interest in different materials, such as infernal iron. He gets really interested in that particular material because he's got some history with it, and kind of shows you how, despite him having some bad associations with the material, how much of the craftsman still persists. He's very good with that material, and he is very persistent about, yes, I want to work this material. I enjoyed it. It is the thing that I am a craftsman of.
And so that's some unique opportunity with a shipment of steel as opposed to a shipment of iron, as opposed to a shipment of pig iron, as opposed to a shipment of multi-puddled cast iron. You've got all of these different grades of steel that you can work with, as we call it steel, all these different grades of iron that you can work with that are good for different things. And I went on a little bit of a rant about plate mail and cannons and things like that.
Might have lost them.
But depending on your infrastructure that supplies your blacksmith dictates his capabilities to an extreme amount. Blacksmiths don't make their own iron. That's the iron mill, which is tied to a water wheel, which is tied to you know, a river that may have been dammed upstream, or et cetera, et cetera. There's
hence Saruman and Two Towers.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We worked a little bit with some of the limitations of some of the different materials that we stated.
Mm.
And mainly, I don't think that's necessarily, oh, modern blacksmith should. I think that's mainly we're nerds about it as well.
Sure,
we really want to
sure.
know the stuff. We like the history. We like
yeah.
all that. So.
Yeah, the blade on my hip is that 200-year-old wrought iron because it's bad.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not a good thing, but it has unique character mm. to it that is intrinsic to the material. And we do it for artistry, not for efficiency
effect, yeah.
or effect or
yeah.
capability.
But a poor quality wrought iron axe is not going to be as useful as maybe a axe that's made out of multiple materials that has a nice steel carbon mm. edge there, or a carbon steel edge. There's some difficulties trying to work that material.
Yeah.
Wrought iron, if it's kind of low quality and hasn't been refined very well, can be really hard to work. You can hit it even while it's hot, and it will want to split apart on you and do bad things.
Mm.
But there are certain smiths who are really good at working with that. There's a devotion to the craft and kind of skill in just knowing how to use your material and operate your fire before you ever get to what happens on the anvil and the hammer. So
I love that. So if I understood, and I'll try and summarize. So when creating a blacksmith NPC, a couple things that you could do to make the character unique would be giving them unique proficiencies with different materials.
Sure.
And also making them constrained with certain materials. Like they just don't
because
have
of the access to the infrastructure.
Right, right. And oh, go ahead.
Oh, I know. I've done that with some of the games that I've run where someone's like, oh, there's a blacksmith in the town instantly. Okay, I want to go find a weapon from him. I want to find something nice. And I'm like, he doesn't have the capabilities. Even if
yeah.
he knew how to do it, he doesn't have the stuff to do it. He's rolling with a caravan. I mean, he's got a little tiny anvil, a little tiny forge that he can pick up and go. He's going to struggle to do anything above arrowheads for you for war, as if that's what you're looking for. So
interesting. I really like that. I also like, from a world-building perspective, because, I mean, we talk about that a lot. I mean, naturally, it's a big part of writing the story. You need to think about the beginning of the supply chain.
Yes.
Where are they getting the raw material? Where's that going? What's happening to it? Where's that going next? And how is the end result, the blacksmith, going to get what they're going to make swords out of, right?
Yep. And where does he get his trade bar from? Which is a bar of wrought iron that has some forging done to it to show its capabilities. And the blacksmiths actually literally go and look at the animal head on the end of the bar of steel.
Hmm.
And then go, okay, that whole thing is probably all good. So I'll take that bar of steel. It's actually one of my... If I could get my hands on a English piece of trade iron, just one of those end pieces that were cut off that had... This steel can be bent and twisted and curled before it starts to fragment. I would love to have that on my coffee table.
Wow.
That's cool.
That is really
so
cool.
There's so much unique depth in this craft. And the other problem I have with blacksmiths is, I said the blacksmith who made armor,
mm-hmm.
blacksmiths don't make armor. Armor smiths make armor. It's a wildly different skill set. Not every blacksmith can do every craft. For example, I am a instructor, manager, organizer, and I have a good booming voice, and I can take and control large classes.
Sure.
That's kind of where I have A, followed the money, and B,
doesn't hurt,
developed
right?
my skill, yeah. And you have Brendan, who has made swords. That's what his passion is.
Mm.
But he doesn't do armor at all. I mean, he's done some, and it's armor, but it's not good.
Mm.
And so we're all pushing our envelope in that regard and trying to get that. And it's taking us years to get good at armor. After we're already good at blacksmiths. We got Stan, who's specializing in wrought iron and more decorative actual blacksmithing work. We do have an armor smith that comes in every week and kind of guides us through building our suits of armor. And he is excellent at that and significantly better than any of us at armor smithing, even though he's been doing it for significantly, he's been working metal for significantly less time than I have been working metal, but
he's specialized.
Specialized is
to
a remarkable degree. I mean, just do a little bit of a Google search on how many craftsmen went into making a traditional Japanese katana.
Oh, wow.
In the 15th century.
Yeah.
It's something like 20.
Jeez.
It's not one smith.
That's crazy. And that even continues on to a little bit of what I was saying with world building. When you describe there's a blacksmith in the village, then in other cities you can say, yeah, you could find blacksmiths, you could find swordsmiths, you could find armorsmiths, you could, and this should probably be included, you could find magically enabled blacksmiths, right?
Oh man, as soon as, like I was talking about, when you get that industry of magic in there, all of a sudden you've got capabilities. And one of the things that I've really wanted to do in one of my worlds is to create a necromantic blacksmith whose water wheel is powered by zombies. Why wouldn't you make a trail hammer that's just a guy walking up a hill?
Don't give him any ideas.
My character's a necromancer.
Yes.
I mean,
that sounds fun.
You want to talk about industry and labor? Every beast of burden could definitely be a zombie.
Oh, yeah.
It's 50 gold piece.
Yeah.
I mean,
jeez. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I like, when it comes to magic and blacksmiths, I like introducing different types of material. I've got someone that I'm working with a little bit.
Power components.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Where they're like, oh, you know what? How about a material that doesn't exist, a metal that doesn't exist? How could that affect certain things? I'm like, well, okay, can it bind to other materials? That's a good question. Mm. I like that because we've got a little bit of opportunity with, if you've got a very particularly light elven metal, if it can bind to another one, let's say it doesn't have a great capability to hold an edge, but that's a lot easier to transport if it's significantly lighter. If it's like an aluminum, it's significantly easier to transport, but if I can still make things out of it that are particularly sharp, it can be quite and good for traveling smiths.
I'd love to see a blacksmith character who's like, you know what, I'm going to put an adamantium edge on a mithril longsword.
Interesting. So the sword's super strong.
That's a fun. I don't know how to do that, but I want to write stats up.
Because it's super light, super fast, super flexible, and yet incredibly hard on the edge.
Mm. Dang. Dang, this has given me lots to think about in terms of like material. How heavy is it? How does it react to different situations? Mm. Heat, cold, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
I think now would be a good time to take a trip into the forge and ask you some more, maybe more forge-related questions, such as what should the average blacksmith shop have when, you know, adventurers go in and the DM's like, this is what you see, stuff like that. So let's take a trip into the forge. Thank you for listening to today's episode. As you can tell, this is just the first half of our interview with Matt and Stan from Wasatch Forge. Come back in a couple days for episode 2 of this 2-part series, diving deep into blacksmiths, or head on over to our YouTube channel and see the whole thing as well as video of where we were and also some pretty cool B-roll of people making iron stuff. Pretty awesome. And in your D&D games, make sure you incorporate blacksmiths well. This Saturday, come back for part 2, but until then, let's go ahead and roll initiative.